It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As awareness of mental health issues among young people increases, the Children's Institute of Pittsburgh has responded by creating a new inpatient unit focused on crisis stabilization and holistic treatment. I'm joined now in studio by Dr. Eileen Wandassen, who is Medical Director of Behavioral Health Services at the Institute. She's here to talk about the new facility and what prompted the organization to invest in such a project. Dr. Wandassen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at essspgh. Call us with your comments and your questions about treatment of mental health issues, particularly as they pertain to young people, to children. They are, as you're about to hear, handled differently than mental illness is among adults. And again, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Why did the Children's Institute want to create this unit?
It's a great question. Let me give you a little bit of context. So the Children's Institute is really a beloved institution in Pittsburgh. It was started over 114 years ago in 1902 by a Pittsburgh socialite. Her name was Mary Irwin Laughlin. And she was so moved by the plight of a little boy. He was six at the time, who lost both of his legs in a horrific train accident. She established the Memorial Home for Crippled Children. That was the name. And from there, the story of the Institute evolved. And so it was the mission and the vision was to meet an unmet need. And that has been the consistent mission of the Children's Institute, to meet unmet needs in Pittsburgh. And so about 4 years ago, the Institute, in looking forward in terms of the mission and, the thinking of where the Institute wanted to go, there was the realization after getting feedback from many of the families that behavioral health was a significant problem with many of the children being seen at the Institute. Many families were not satisfied with the care that they were receiving. And so this was sort of echoed consistently. We need behavioral health. And so this was really the idea, the birth child, to develop the inpatient unit. And we are going to be, you know, doing more, but the inpatient unit is where we begin. We continue the story of the Institute.
You know, I have a question written down here. How prevalent is mental illness among children? But I'm thinking that the better question might be, how often does it go undetected, or how often are the symptoms of mental illness confused with the symptoms of some other thing?
You know, I can tell you in general all the time, but if you think about it, if it's undetected,
all the time.
We don't know. If it's undetected, we don't know, right? But I believe that it's
but
all the time.
But we would know if we find out later, right?
In general, the prevalence rate of childhood mental illness is about 1 in 5, 20%. So that's a lot.
Let's process this. 1 in 5 children suffer from some form of mental illness.
Diagnosable mental illness. Hmm. Diagnosable mental illness. And so we want to be able to identify and meet the needs of the children who not only have medical conditions, but who are in acute behavioral crisis. These are children actually, and this is a significant unmet need in Pittsburgh. These are children who don't really fit well on a general psychiatric unit because their medical conditions might prevent them from, you know, being admitted there, or maybe a parent doesn't want them to be hospitalized on that unit because they feel like they don't really fit there because they've got this medical condition and they're in acute behavioral crisis, but they feel like they would do better at home because the idea of admitting your child on a typical psychiatric unit is so scary. I don't know if you've ever heard stories of you know, from a parent.
I think we've all heard stories.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and then imagine translating that for, you know, a child and what that feels like. And so the unit, I don't know if you've seen pictures. There was an article in the paper this past week, but the unit itself, as you walk off of the elevator is bright. Mm-hmm. There's almost a rainbow mural on the floor. It's bright. And so imagine parents have told me this is the scariest, most horrible moment in my life with my child having to be admitted here. Imagine them getting off the elevator and breathing a sigh of relief that, wow, this place does not look like your typical psychiatric inpatient unit.
What ends up leading a parent to bring their child to a mental health unit? At what point, you know, how do they come to that realization? Who helps them realize that your child needs help?
It's usually, you know, it can be from, you know, multiple sources. Sometimes there's an acute event at school. Sometimes the child is indicating disturbing conversations with their therapist. Sometimes a situation, you know, might occur even on the playground. But the realization for most parents is that I cannot help my child anymore. I can't do this alone. That is far and away the consistent kind of conversation that I've had with parents. And I tell you, the parents that I have come across, they do everything in their power to help their children, far and away. But sometimes it's just not enough. And so you need the professional expertise that we can offer.
How much of it is you know, a condition that a child simply has, as opposed to a situational condition or something that's caused by a traumatic event? Does it matter?
Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we have a combination of factors. Sometimes we have really truly, you know, a psychosocial situation that prompts the acute crisis. Sometimes we have a combination of ongoing chronic issues, you know, in the child's life, and a combination of all of them. And then you have, you know, all the manifestations of the psychiatric disorder that really brings it all to life, functional impairment. So that's part of our job, is to untangle all of those issues and really prioritize and try to understand. And then, you know, the idea is to give the family hope in a context of love, in, you know, with the result being that the child leaves and the family leaves more empowered, with a whole backpack of skills that they could use to live better. We want to really focus on wholeness. We want to focus on not just the psychopathology, but really looking at the idea of a holistic approach.
What does that mean? What does it mean to have a wholeness approach?
Yeah, so we want to really recognize that we are dealing with a whole child. So we are dealing with their mind, their body, and their spirit. Much of psychiatric treatment, and I think as a field we're moving in a different direction looking at all these pieces, but so often we're focused on, you know, what the diagnosis is, and sometimes because of factors that are at play in terms of you know, the payers and their expectations, we are forced to do things like, you know, looking at medications more quickly than one is comfortable with. And so our approach is going to be somewhat atypical. And we think progressive. We will be using treatments that have evidence-based, and we will be encouraging the use of those treatments. For example, addressing the body. So all children will have not just a psychiatric assessment, but a physical health assessment. And we will be using different modalities of treatment. Each child will receive at least several sessions of biofeedback. We will be providing a very innovative Mediterranean-influenced diet, not your typical diet that one would see on a typical inpatient unit. So an emphasis on whole grains and proteins and vegetables and fruit. And it'll be something that pretty much all the kids will receive. So a kid can't say, well, I would rather have pizza, because they're not going to be, you know, given the option of having, you know, the less healthier food.
And what is, you know, someone might be listening to this going, well, what difference does that make?
mind, body, spirit. So all of it put together, acknowledges that we, you know, in order, you know, to have healthy children, they have to have healthy bodies. And addressing all of those pieces, we will be, go ahead.
I was going to say, we have a caller on the line who I think has a question along the lines of what you're talking about. Robert, who is in Brentwood. Hi, Robert. Welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Good afternoon. Very interesting topic. Unfortunately, this is a year ago. I lost my nephew. Now, he wasn't a youngster. He was 32. But because he committed suicide, and he's been treated by professionals in this area for at least 10 years, but we won't go into that. But here's my comment, because I read a lot on this topic. In fact, today at the White House, they're initiating this gut microbiome project, and somebody from UPMC, I think a Dr. Allison Morris, is representing UPMC down there. And you did mention the Mediterranean diet, but I would encourage you to look into this microbiome. This is essentially the microorganisms that occupy the gut. There's obviously a gut dysbiosis. And the other simple thing you can do is vitamin D3 levels. Get them up as high as you can, because mood elevation is often associated with good vitamin D3 levels. So your comments, please.
Great, great points, Robert. And so what about can these elements that he's talking about influence mental health?
Absolutely. There is a growing literature. The area of medicine that this is sort of falls into is called an integrative approach, where we'll be looking at complementary alternative approaches that work adjunctively with medications, traditional medications. And so this has actually been a focus of the Institute for many years. We have a developmental pediatrician. His name is Dr. Scott Faber, who has been a champion, actually, of dietary change, the use of supplemental supplements. Each child, you know, we will be testing for things like vitamin D deficiency. Each child will be receiving omega-3 fatty acid supplements and multivitamin. Each child will have a nutritional assessment. So we want to acknowledge that to have, you know, a healthy mind, you have to have a healthy body. This is one body, you know, and we in this field have sort of, in our efforts to understand, we sort of parsed out, you know, these diagnoses. But I think that our field is really moving in a different direction, I hope.
We're talking with Dr. Eileen Wandossen. She's Medical Director of Behavioral Health Services at the Children's Institute of Pittsburgh. What stigmas do children and teenagers with mental illness face, and how do you prepare them to deal with this?
Yeah, it's so vexing. There is still a huge stigma in terms of even attending simply counseling. People, and it's very family dependent too.
There's still huge attending counseling.
I have to share with you that the suicides that I've lived in Pennsylvania for 7 years, and the suicides, with the exception of one, of the youth that I was made aware of, were all children who were really not involved in any type of significant mental health services. So that tells me that these children did not feel like they had an opportunity or a way to alleviate their pain. And that is so troubling to me. It's so troubling. It really reflects a mindset. It reflects still this idea that that mental illness or being troubled or having emotional pain is still not acceptable. There's still, you know, many, many, many thoughts that I hear this so often. This is just a phase in your life. This is just normal adolescence. This is just, oh, they're just being a teenager, you know. And I believe that it is because people don't want to still acknowledge that mental illness does exist and that it needs to be treated. And this is, you know, not something that a child is willfully doing. I even hear this child is evil. I'm sorry, I've never met an evil child in my life. But that's still the thinking that, you know, that this is willful, that this is, you know, evil, that this is somehow something that the child is purposefully doing.
How important is family engagement throughout this process? And I hope that Robert in Brentwood is still listening. Our thoughts certainly go out to you. I can't imagine, what you went through losing, I believe he said it was his nephew.
His nephew.
And he clearly was concerned about his nephew. How important is family engagement throughout this process, not only from the parents, but from the aunts and the uncles and other people?
Intimately. Again, our approach is progressive. I'll share with you. I recently had a family member, my brother, who was in an ICU after a stroke. And if you think about ICUs, they have this window of visitation about 2 hours. This ICU said no, families can come and go as they please, and they can be there right with their family member as long as possible. I want to have that same type of approach. Maybe not 24 hours, but I want our families to be able to engage and to observe. I want my staff to be transparent and to be examples. We will have parent coaching sessions throughout the week. We will have individualized family sessions for each patient. Our families are critical because this is the system. This is the their world, and so absolutely we encourage it. We want it. We will not be able to move this child forward without engagement, and that's huge.
And we're down to just about 30 seconds. But clearly, one of the questions I had was how much were you consulted? But clearly, you've had a lot of say in how this is being set up.
You know, it's interesting. I only started here a few months ago, but I was involved a few. Maybe in December. Really, this has been a love affair for the institution for many years, and so this has been an ongoing process with many, many people involved, and it's a credit to the institution that this is the direction they've gone.
We've been talking with Dr. Eileen Wan Dawson. She's Medical Director of Behavioral Health Services at the Children's Institute of Pittsburgh, talking about some new developments in this area, and we will be following the progress on this and check in with you at some point in the future. Thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, a conversation with actor David Conrad about why he chose The Third Man to celebrate the 90th anniversary of Dormont's Hollywood Theater. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. We'll be right back.